Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us Torah, and Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us minds, and Kadosh Baruch Hu encouraged us to think and to figure things out. Anyone who has spent any time learning Gemara knows that Talmud Torah is full of asking questions, and that we're very excited about asking questions and trying to seek answers. And that's a very important and holy task. And as we enter into the world of inquiry and trying to understand Torah more deeply, try to understand the world around us more deeply, I would throw out just one introductory thought before I get into this morning's topic. David HaMelech is near the end of his life. He's had a very successful life on many fronts, spiritually, politically, Shusar Rabbanim. David HaMelech calls over his son Shlomo some parting words at the end of his life. Divrei Yavin records, in the Divrei Yom Aleph, turns to Shlomo and David says, Da'as Elokei Avicha V'avdeyu V'leiv Shalem V'nefesh Hakeh. Da'as Elokei Avicha. Know the God of your fathers. Know the God of your fathers, and then through that, you'll have a rich avos Hashem. You'll have a life of avos Hashem. Belayim shalem nefesh hafeitza, with excitement, wholeheartedly. What is this recipe? Da esel kei avicha, know the God of your fathers. So several we shown him, several of the rationalists. Shusar Rabban. Several that we showed him, Radak, the Chavos Halavavos, suggests that Das El Kehavicha is the recipe that we need. To know, many we shall understand, Yudia means to inquire, means to try to understand our Muna, to ask some questions, to try to figure out why we believe, what believe, what it all means. Das El Kehavicha means that what we're seeking to know is El Kehavicha, the God, the Bishlot says to Shlomo of your father. But it has to begin with the sense of El Kehavicha. You have to begin with the sense that we have tradition, we have Mesorah, and we accept what we have, and then we're going to seek to be Yodea that. We're going to seek to understand that as well as we can. To know it not only to begin with the fact that we have tradition, and then to see if we can deepen that tradition, deepen our appreciation of that tradition through understanding, through asking questions, through seeking answers. It would be foolish for anyone to think that I'm so brilliant that anything that I don't understand just doesn't make sense. Baruch Hashem, we all have finite minds. As Yeshayahu reminded us just yesterday in the Haftarah of Etanas Tibur, and Kadosh Baruch Hu is infinite and we're finite, so it makes good sense that there'll be things that we don't understand. There are a lot of things you understand now that you didn't understand 3 years ago. There'll be things, by extension, that you understand in 3 years from now, you don't understand now. But the things you'll understand in 20 years from now, you don't yet understand, and beyond. So, if we have that sense of intellectual humility, that there are things I want to understand more, I may get it, or I may not yet get it, just because I don't get it doesn't mean there isn't sense to it. With that sort of intellectual humility, das elokei avicha. We have, Baruch Hashem, a wonderful, rich Masorah, the Muna, and we're going to seek to understand it as best we can. And with that sort of intellectual humility in mind, so let's ask some questions. I want to open a conversation. Look at, I think it was Francis Bacon, perhaps, who spoke about looking at the two books that Rebbe Shalom wrote. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and Kadosh Baruch Hu created the universe. And so we assume that things are going to hang together in a coherent way, and we're going to seek to see if we understand how that's so. Oftentimes people will raise the question of Torah and science in terms of how they work together. How learning Torah gives you a deeper appreciation of science. How studying science gives you a deeper, richer appreciation of Torah. That's not our topic right now. What we want to look at is not confluence, when we see how things are working together, but confluence. When it seems like Torah is saying one thing, science is saying something else, and how do you make sense of that? It's clear that the Chachmei HaTalmud used scientific information. It's clear the fact that Talmud used scientific information,
spoke to scientists of their time. That's a braisa maseches
nidat al kaveis, where they reach out for the dealing with very, very complex and weighty shilas of the isur ikaris,
and they reach out to scientists of the time
to get some answers, answers which they're going to paskin, they're going to follow psak halacha l'maaseh. So if you needed a raya, we follow science. Chazal clearly valued science. The other question is, what do you do when Torah and science seem to be at odds?
There are a couple of different situations that comes up.
But I want to look at one where it's very, very clear, and that's our topic for this morning, is the question of the age of the universe. Oftentimes when there's a conflict in Torah and science, the scholarship, the science may not be quite as clear or quite as well-founded as it seems, but here the science is rather well-founded. You open up a Chumash, and the Chumash tells us, Kadosh Baruch creates the universe in 6 days, the first paragraph of Parshas Bereishis, then you follow the years from there, Adam, Tesheis, Te'enosh, and so on and so forth, through Parshas Bereishis and Noach, working all the way until the present day, less than 6,000 years, from Briyas HaOlam to now. And without, I know we have different guys here with different degrees of scientific background, they don't want to get too technical, but there are multiple good indications that the universe is several billion years old. Whether it's 9 billion or 15 billion, what's it called, billion years between friends, right? However you slice it, that's obviously, billions of years is a big difference. But however many billions of years one might assume the universe is, but the Big Bang Theory tells us that the universe began billions and billions of years ago, between, let's say, 6 billion and 6,000. That's not a small rounding error, right? That's six orders of magnitude. That's a pretty solid kasha. And there's redshift data, and there's a lot of other data. There's plenty of multiple streams of data that indicate the universe is billions of years old. And we look at the Chumash, and the Chumash seems quite clear. The universe is thousands of years old. But this does not seem like a situation where the science is faulty. There are plenty of situations where the archaeology is faulty, or there are a lot of gaps, not for now, but this seems like a situation where the science seems pretty clear, and the Chumash seems pretty clear. And we have a direct, what looks like a direct head-on collision. So what are we supposed to make of that? It's all kasha. 6,000? Billions. What's the shot? What I'd like to do over the time that we have together is, the second thing I'd like to do is present to you at least the beginnings. This is a larger topic. I would love to continue this conversation. I already have with some of you. I'd love to continue this conversation with as many of you as are interested. But I'd love to present three, what strikes me as three authentic and satisfying ways of, possible ways of resolving this question. Which one is correct, I cannot tell you, but they all seem like legitimate the possibilities. Some of you may go for one more than the other, and that's totally fine. Before we even get to Teirutzim, it's important to point out that while there's a kasha in the details that needs to be spoken to, and we will speak to, Gerald Schroeder and others make the point that before you get into details, it's oftentimes you hear Big Bang Theory, like, oh, that's, you know, how's that to the Torah? We'll have to deal with the details, but it's important to realize that the concept of Big Bang Theory actually represents scientists after 3,000+ years coming around to recognize the truth of the first pasuk of Bereishis. Because again, I apologize to those with a more sophisticated science background, but we'll oversimplify somewhat. The gist of Big Bang Theory is that around, again, 9-15 billion years ago, is this incredibly powerful, incredibly dense point of energy, which equals mc squared, begins to expand and cool, and energy turns into matter and expands. And now you have electrons and some protons, so you have some hydrogen, and then it continues to expand and cool down. Again, this is highly oversimplified, I apologize. And slowly the hydrogen begins to clump in certain places into stars, which are factories that manufacture heavier elements. And after many billions of years, here we are with this complex, wonderful, colorful universe. That's the theory in a nutshell. And that moment, which is loosely colloquially called the Big Bang, is the beginning of energy and matter as we know it. It's the beginning of science and cause and effect as we know it. So that's essentially saying that the universe had a particular start in time. There was a point in time at which stuff began. There was a point in time at which science and causality began. And it may not be meaningful, cosmologists will tell you, to ask, well, what caused the Big Bang? Because, well, whatever caused the Big Bang was outside of science, as you know, because science, physics, causality, mathematics, they all begin at that moment. So you stop to think for a moment. That's exactly the first pasuk of Bereishis. That something outside of science, something outside of nature, causes the start of everything. That's Bereishis, Bara Elokim, Hashem and Eretz. Something outside of nature, a supernatural being that drives the creation of everything. That's what we call, in Hebrew, the Borei Olam. So we need to deal with details, and we will deal with details in a moment, but it's worth first appreciating that Big Bang Theory, the concept, is a radical departure from what had been, for most of the last couple of thousand years, the dominant view among scientists that the universe has sort of always been here. Aristotle talks about it, and many before and certainly since him spoke about that as well. So the scientific recognition that there was a creation, even atheistic scientists use the terminology creation, that's massive. That's massive. We need to deal with details. But that's very, very significant. Okay, so now let's talk about details. Good. The Kadosh Baruch Hu created the universe. But when? The Chumash says the Kadosh Baruch Hu created the universe 6,000 years ago. Cosmology tells me creation occurred billions of years ago. Well, which one is it? So there may be lots of different ways of skinning that cat. Maybe lots of different ways of resolving that conflict. I'd like to present three. And in a nutshell, I would say that you could sum up the three as Bereishis Kipshuto, Science Kipshuto, or both Bereishis and Science Kipshuto. Either we take Bereishis at face value, we take Science at face value, or we'll take both of them at face value. So what do I mean? So number one, Bereishis Kipshuto will go like this. And again, as I said before, to my small mind, all of these are authentic from a Torah perspective. And all of them are, to my mind, are intellectually satisfying. So if one, and I can't prove to you which one is right, maybe there's a fourth parent. There are certainly three very, I would think, compelling ways to resolve this problem. So I imagine some of you will take my number one, some will take my number two, some will take my number three. And that's all good. So number one. Now what will be Bereishis Kipshuto? So what's Bereishis Kipshuto? The Gemara tells us in Hula in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara raises the question of the chicken and the egg. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? So the Gemara says,
the chicken,
exactly. The Gemara says, look in Chumash, and the Gemara has other psukim in Tanakh as well, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu creates Adam HaRishon as an adult. When he was chronologically a second old, he was already developmentally mature. If a doctor would have given, he didn't look like he was an hour-old human, he didn't look like a baby. He was a full-grown man, even though chronologically he was only seconds, minutes, and then hours old. And the Gemara says, the Gemara highlights that Adam Rishon was nivra v'kol maso, full height, full development. In other words, had there been an internist around there to give Adam Rishon a checkup on the first day of his life, he would not have seemed like he wasn't just on the outside, he looked big. If you had given an internal checkup, he looked like someone who had gone through 30, 40 years of development, of the normal developmental process of a human being. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, how's that possible? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created biology and chemistry, created Adam looking fully developed. And then the Gemara goes on to say it wasn't just Adam. It's the chickens too. The Gemara says, Kol HaBriyos, based on Pesukim, all the Briyos were Nivru, Vikol Masim. From the first day, the sixth day of Bereishis, the Gemara says, the rhinoceros, I don't know how old rhinoceri are when they're adults, but the rhinoceros look like an adult rhinoceros. And the elephant looked like an adult elephant, and the beetles were adult beetles. There were redwoods that were adult redwoods on the third day of Bria, and so on and so forth. Older Brias were never become of. So I'm not sure why that should be limited only to living brios as opposed to the rest of the bria as well. So it stands to reason, according to that Gemara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a developmentally mature human being, even though he's chronologically moments old. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a developmentally mature redwood tree, a developmentally mature parrot, a developmentally mature zebra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also could have, by the same token, created a developmentally mature solar system, developmentally mature stars and galaxies and universe. Yeah. What does that mean? So let's process that for a moment. Let's understand what that could mean and why that would make any sense. What that would mean would be the same way, the same as, let's say, if you take a look at a chicken. If you ever watch a chicken hatch? So chickens have a little, it's called an egg tooth. Little chicks have a little egg tooth, a little protrusion on their beak. It looks like a little tooth sticking up out of their beak that they use to peck their way out of the shell. The chick is stuck in the shell. How's it going to, shells are very strong. How's it going to get out from that? It's develops a little tool, this little egg tooth on its beak, and uses that to peck its way out. Then later on, the egg tooth falls off, but the chicken has left, many birds are left with a little indentation on top of their beak, where the egg tooth used to be. So on that first day of Bria, the Gemara is saying, there was a mature chicken which had never come out of a, never been hatched, and never come out of a shell, and never had an egg tooth, but it looked like it had. It was created mature. Part of a mature chicken is that indentation. It had that indentation. So, by the same logic, the biology is correct, the geology is correct. A mature planet that harbored life for many millions of years would have layers and layers of fossils and layers of extinct species. That's what a mature planet looks like. So, perhaps, option number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created mature Earth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a mature universe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a mature universe with stars that look like they're already dying, because that's what a mature, grown-up universe has. Okay. Now, if that's the case, that means that you can study cosmology, and you can study in general. You can study nuclear physics, whatever you want to derive from studying astrophysics, because the science is all right. It may never have happened, but the good Lord who created physics created an exact replica. Now, some of you might say, well, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? And is this saying like, oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put his dinosaur bones there to try to fool us? I don't think so at all. What it means is the following. And again, this is only option number one. What it means is the following. Ramban writes in many places, Rambam talks about this as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a universe, that means he could do any of these he wants to at any time. But we look around and see, we look around at our own experience, and we look through Tanakh, it's clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do any miracle he wants to, but generally doesn't. There'll be rare instances where, for a particular cause, the good Lord will do miracles. Do nisim to save a tzaddik, for some other reasons. Rabban discusses that over the course of the Perush al Torah. Rambam talks about it in one of his letters. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly made the decision in creating the universe that he wanted, in general, the universe to be rhythmic, the universe to be patterned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created a totally random universe, but he chose to create a universe governed by the mathematical laws of physics and chemistry, which he himself created. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this world to be. Generally predictable, generally mathematical. Everyone said, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will press the pause button and do a nace. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world generally to be natural and scientific. So I could understand, perhaps, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu would want to create a ready-to-use world. Because if the purpose of the physical universe is to provide a platform, as Ram Kala and others tell us, a platform for human beings to engage in the silos, for us to be challenged and to rise to challenge and shape ourselves and shape our Olam Haba, the goal of Olam Hazeh is to be Olam HaNisayim. So I would understand it's a lot more efficient to, cut right to the chase. Instead of letting the universe develop for billions of years before it's finally ready to be a platform for people who are ready to have neshamas and engage in the sinners, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fast forwarded and gets right to the point. He creates the universe ready to roll. We're the ready to roll world, we're the ready to roll people, and we can get right down to the business of the Nisyonos of Olam Hazeh.
I understood that there are those who want to say here that in order to have certain parts of the universe, the rest of it must already be old. You need rotten wood for termites, you need carcasses for vultures, which you couldn't have done part of without the rest of it.
Okay, now say even more generally, yeah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was interested in. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in this stage of the universe, a stage where you have people with minds and neshamas who are engaged in the nisyonos, which are the point, the telos of all this Olam Hazeh, so I could understand why Kadosh Baruch Hu would start right from this point. But at the same time, being that Rav Moshe was interested in a scientific universe, being that Kadosh Baruch Hu was interested in dropping and having as few nisim as possible, even if he's fast-forwarding, he would want the universe to be as natural, as in accordance with science as possible. So even if he's starting from here, it's going to be the way it would look had it gone through all of that development in accord with geology, chemistry, physics, and so on. So that's approach number one. That's what we could call Bereshis Kipshuto. The universe is indeed 6,000 years old, as reported in Chumash. And by the time Kadosh Baruch Hu was done with that six-day process, you have a universe which was ready to roll and looked 15 billion years old. One possibility. Another possibility, on the other hand, I know, and you'll definitely get to share on time. I hope you're eating your donuts. A second possibility would be to say science kipshuto, not creation kipshuto. What's that all about? Mishnah tells us in the beginning of the second paragraph of Chagiga, talks about different areas of Kabbalah. One of the areas of Kabbalah is Maaseh Merkava, the study of the first paragraph of Yechezkel, which is the Haftarah for the first day of Shavuos, about the Malachim, the Kisei Hakava, and the Chayos, and the Alfanim, and the wings of the Malachim. You look at that Haftarah and you know, but you don't really know what it means. It's not about cute little creatures that have six wings in the back. That's a symbol to convey certain ideas that until you're initiated into Kabbalah, you don't have access to. The other field of Kabbalah that the Mishnah describes there is Maaseh Bereishis, which sounds like a reference to the first product of Bereishis. As a matter of fact, the Ramban HaTorah in his Perush, several times in the beginning of Chumash, talks about different parts of Bereishis that's all Kabbalah. Those are the upper waters, the lower waters, the second day of Bereishis. Ramban says, that's all deep Kabbalah, I can't share it with you. If you know what it means, you can't share it with other people, that's deep Kabbalah. And Ramban has one, two lines there when he makes in the Perush on Parakal Pashadal, where it sounds like perhaps in the first couple of chapters of Bereishis are riddled with deep mysticism. So that's approach number two, is it may well be, according to Ramban, perhaps, that the import of the first part, it is absolutely, literally true that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the universe at some point in time, and he is the creator and master and continues to actively run the entire universe. But it may be that the first paragraph of Bereishis is not concerned with the physical unfolding of that process, but with the spiritual underpinnings of that process. And that the first paragraph of Bereishis may be more mysticism than answering the question of why, not the question of how. And finally, let me leave you with option number three, which many people might find the most compelling of all. There's a group of scientists who have done work in the following field. One is Nathan Abiezer. He's a chair of physics at Berlin University. Another is Gerald Schroeder, the MIT-trained physicist who works for Israeli defense companies, who have suggested that both are literally true. If you make the assumption that Rabbi Monk did, that the 6 days refer to six chunks of time, they both suggest different twists. Personally, I find Nathan Abiezer's approach even more compelling. As actually, that the first paragraph of Bereishis is actually describing, in many ways, what we have since scientifically discovered as well, about the unfolding of the universe. And now time is tight, let me give you one quick example of that. Besides the fact that we hear about marine life before land life and so on and so forth, which scientists have since discovered the fossil record as well, what's creating the first day? Light. An incredibly powerful light, which Chazal tell us later disappears. So what does Big Bang theory tell us? Just as an example, that the universe begins with something that no human could have scientifically known thousands of years ago. The universe begins as an incredibly powerful, unbelievably intense, powerful point of energy, which subsequently, that sort of energy will never again be seen in Olam Hazeh as we know it, because it very quickly expands and cools, but becomes, it never happened again as we know it, but in a sense, that energy inheres within everything, because everything material in this universe was originally produced from that point of energy. That's exactly what the Chumash says. that the universe begins with an R, which later becomes Gamas. Abiezer goes on to talk about working through the second day, Pangea, and the movement of the tectonic shift of different plates, and Yavasha, and then Yavasha breaking into multiple parts. There's a lot to be done. So let's sum up, and then I would love to continue this conversation with those who are interested. Again, what we saw, we dealt with a particular problem, the question of how old is the universe, thousands or billions of years old. We saw three approaches to that. Bereshit Kipshuto, like I was going to create a mature universe. Science Kipshuto, 15 billion years, and Bereshit is not really talking about the what, it's not talking about the physics question, it's talking about the metaphysics, the philosophy, the mysticism. And finally, approach number three, which is that the Chumash is actually describing much of what we have since discovered with remarkable detail once you notice that once you understand that the 6 days are six chunks of time, and you understand that at the end of that six chunk of time is when a human body is for the first time endowed with a neshama. And let's not forget that this falls within the larger framework that with which you began, of Das Elkei Avicha, a blend of intellectual humility, respect for Masorah, and seeking to use the minds that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us to understand more deeply, can bring us hopefully not only to understanding, but a rich Avos Hashem with excitement, Benefesh Chafetza, wholeheartedly, B'Lev Shalem, thank you so much, and I look forward to your questions in the future.